Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. As we record this, it is Sunday, October 28th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is with us today. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Are you having an exciting week?
Oh, yeah. It's just everything. You know? I mean, work and home and stuff, and I'll give you a thing. I'll tell you one thing I'm trying to do. Okay, all right.
Yeah, okay.
I think I've said this a couple of times on this program, but the mortgage on my condo happens to be underwater. Okay. Mm. Now I have excellent credit and everything, you know, whatever. And when I closed on the condo, okay, it was in 2006 when I think it was Greenspan still, because Bernanke hadn't been named yet. Okay, well, they had been ratcheting rates up because they knew the economy, you know, people had been, you know, going a little bit crazy. Okay, so when I closed, I happened to close at about the peak of the interest rates at the time, which me that I went with a fully documented loan, not one of these, you're breathing here loans. You know, they offered me a couple of those that, you know, like, you know, pass a breath test and get a loan. I could get $2 million. And I'm like, what are you, crazy? I can't afford to pay two. I can't afford that. You're out of your fucking mind. So I went and I actually passed a fully documented loan. Okay. However, my mortgage broker, who, good friend of mine, but since has been deceased, unfortunately. Okay. You know, he was pretty old and he
Stop rattling, Yvonne. Go ahead.
He screwed up something on the paperwork. I actually asked for an adjustable rate. And for some reason, it came back fixed. Okay? Mm-hmm. I don't know why. So, because the main thing about it, I actually expected rates to drop, which they did. Okay? So, at the time, it would have just forget about anything happening without me having to go to the expense of refinancing or whatever. My mortgage payment would have dropped. Time came by when it was supposed to adjust. All of a sudden, it didn't happen. I checked with the bank, and I looked through the paperwork, which I thought, and I'm pretty diligent with paperwork when it comes to contracts, okay? I swear to God, I read that it was five-year adjustable, and it wasn't, okay? Mm. It apparently, the offers that I was shown were, however, the final paperwork, when it came back, was not, okay? Which came as an incredible shock to me when I realized, shit. So I've been trying to get the bank, which I will say it's Wells Fargo, for about a year to get somehow refinance my place.
And meanwhile, you're underwater. They don't want
right. So I can't refinance straight. So I've tried the straight up approaches. But look, but here's the thing. Even if I wasn't upside down, they would not refinance my property anyway. And that's the that comes into the goofier thing where in the state of Florida, because of the mortgage mess, they're refusing to refinance a lot of condos, period. There is a big swath of condos in Florida where for multiple reasons, they are just flat out refusing to refinance those, okay? One of the reasons that it happens to be here is that the developer didn't sell all the units and a bulk owner owns a substantial percentage of the units. And because of that, they will not do any financing of any sort on any unit in here, period. No bank. Okay. Which is, you know, one of the reasons why this real estate market, you know, is like crazy as it is right now. So what I've been doing is I've decided I became a man on a mission. I said, you know what? I'm going to get this stupid bank one way or another to fucking refinance me. I don't give a shit. So I have been basically annoying the hell out of Wells Fargo, okay, for an extended period of time right now, okay? So I got to the point now where I've actually filled out paperwork and they've actually come close to actually making me some offer to refinance my property, heaven forbid, okay? Now, but here's the thing about this. What I've discovered, the banks, they don't want to do this, okay? Or they say they do. But along the way, every person that I've talked to as Wells Fargo has tried to talk me out of it, okay? Mm-hmm. All right? Which is one of the crazy things. They have just, you know, well, this could do this or this could do that or, you know, I mean, you have a debt. I'm like, look, just get me to the next guy I got to talk to, okay? It just basically come down to. So I'm going to go through that. So I've filled out and answered a set of information already like 3 times, and they said they're sending me a packet in the mail. So even though I filled it out online right now, I get this packet on Friday finally, which I should have gotten like about 3 weeks, to fill out some information. And it's this government program, for whatever reason, that says making the home affordable program, request for mortgage assistance, blah, blah, blah. But here's the funny thing. You know, the banks are so screwed up. I've already filled this out online, and for some reason they're sending me paperwork to basically fill out the same shit I already sent them online. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I am like, right now, I'm looking at this and I'm like, for real? Really? Didn't I just already fill this out like 3 different times and now you want me to freaking fill it out again?
So you've had fun this week.
Yeah, I've had fun this week. But my point is to anybody out there who is having...
Oh, you have a point. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. To anybody out there that is being discouraged by your bank to go do something about your mortgage, which there's a significant swath of Americans that has something, the strategy that I found out works is, you know what? Keep freaking bothering the hell out of them, because they will try to talk you out of it at every step of the way. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, on our side, we actually did refinance a couple months ago. It was, you know, zero hassle or problems whatsoever. And like, we were like, it's only been a year. Should we? What the hell are we even thinking about that? But it was a nice little drop in interest rates. We'll save like $150-$175 a month, and the break even time was like 2 years.
Right.
So we're like, we'll do that.
No, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, yeah, I even had my brother, for example, close on his house like less than 2 years ago, who went through the same thing. I mean, it was, you know, rates have dropped so substantially right now that the time to refinance is now.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, if you can take advantage of it, go do it, because it is, I mean, and do not get discouraged by your damn bank is what I'm telling you right now. Okay. Because I've heard so many people that have been discouraged by their bank to do so. I just decided, I'm just saying, fuck it. I ain't got nothing to lose. Fuck it. I'll just, you know, I'm just going to keep hammering away until they finally give in.
Anyway, so we do have other topics today, too. So we got a whole bunch going on this week, actually. We've got the election, of course. We'll do the usual election update and a little bit of talk, because we've got less than 2 weeks left now. Like, what is it now, 9 days, something like that, as we're recording?
Yeah, it's not even that. Yeah, we're very close, as we were talking about that the other day. Yeah, that we're almost there.
Yeah, I mean, a week and 2 days. So, and then of course, we got Hurricane Sandy bearing down on the east coast of the U.S. We have the iPad mini announcement. MS Surface came out as well for sale now, and we've got some reviews of that in. And did Windows 8 come out this week, too, or is that, like, next week? I don't know.
I thought it was this week.
I thought,
you know,
it was this week, too.
Here's the thing. They kept talking like they were going to make a massive announcement. And did you really feel like they did?
Yeah.
Because I didn't.
That's the point there. So let's dive in. What do you want to hit first?
Oh, let's go into the election. We got to do the election update first.
Okay, election update first. Funky music.
Yes.
So my latest update as of my Saturday, October 27th update, is pretty much the same as we've been for a while. Obama's ahead in it's 303-235. If everybody wins the states they're ahead in, Obama wins. Romney does have a path to win if he pulls ahead in a bunch of close states. I debuted on Friday a new zoomed in version of my chart that shows some of the critical events. So look at election2012.ablesmay.com if you want to see it. But it shows how, you know, the Paul Ryan VP announcement helped a little bit for Romney. The Republican and Democratic conventions basically did jack, although the Democratic convention helped Obama a bit. The 47% video was devastating for Romney for a couple weeks. And then it peaked, started to go down again, and then you had the first debate, and then everything collapsed for Obama. But even during that collapse, he never lost the lead. It was just less of a lead. And then Obama's been recovering ever since. In the last few days, the last part of this week, you saw a little bit of rebound for Romney in a few states. But here's the critical part. The rebound that Romney was seeing was in states that are unlikely to make a difference in the Electoral College. So And I'm actually working on a chart right now for my next update that shows what the margin is in the tipping point state. And right now, that tipping point is Ohio. And right now, Obama is ahead by, making sure I'm looking at...
That's like an interesting number.
As of yesterday's update, as of yesterday's update, the tipping point actually flipped from Ohio to Nevada because Obama's margin in Ohio became greater than his margin in Nevada. So Nevada is the tipping point state as of Saturday's update with 2.8%, which means that the margin in Nevada and all the states that Romney is doing better in Nevada have to improve by at least 2.8% in order for Romney to win. So a 2.8, 2.9, 3% increase in Romney's position would win him the election. But that's the margin he needs to increase by, is about 3% in order to win the election. So despite, you know, you've got all these polls for the national popular vote that show Romney ahead or dead even, what's the Real Clear Politics average right now? Real Clear Politics right now, this very second, has Romney up by 0.9%. But that's deceptive. In order to win the Electoral College, he needs to pull things by almost 3% in his direction. And one of the things we see speculation of increasing daily is a popular vote Electoral College split, with Romney winning the popular vote but losing the Electoral College.
And I guess that we talked a little bit about this. I mean, you guys, I did listen to the podcast last week since I couldn't be on. Okay.
Cool.
One of the things is it's just, Romney seems to be more ahead, say, in states that he's got secured, say, like, for example, Texas, okay, or Georgia. But the reality is that that's not really translating into additional electoral votes for Romney.
Yeah, so like if we look recently, like we had Missouri moving further towards Romney, Tennessee moving further towards Romney. Pennsylvania also moved a little towards Romney, but Obama's going to win there, but more votes for Romney is more votes for Romney.
Right.
Florida moves a little towards Romney. Florida is one of the, is close. It could go either way. Who the hell knows? But it looks like no matter which way Florida goes, it's not necessarily going to make a difference to the election.
Right.
Although if Romney loses Florida, he's lost.
If Romney loses Florida, he's done.
Yes,
but winning Florida doesn't get him to the magic number.
Indiana also moved further towards Romney. You know, so we've got state after state after state that don't necessarily make a damn bit of difference to the Electoral College, where Romney is strengthening a bit. And this is exactly the kind of formula you need in order to get this kind of split. Nate Silver still estimates the chance of a split at only about 5-6%. Another political scientist I follow, Sam Wang at Princeton, who's also got a very good forecast, puts that percentage a lot higher at around 25%. And then I saw something, I believe it was in a Washington Post article, where a Romney advisor off the record said the Romney campaign now believes the chance of this scenario is close to 50-50.
It's a good probability scenario at this stage because of how the country is voting. I mean, I'm not certainly, you know, this is not a scenario that can be dismissed at this point.
No, it definitely isn't. You know, and I think Romney's probably, I don't know, maybe the Romney campaign's on this one, because, I mean, the trends I am seeing are certainly the national popular vote polls have, for the last few weeks, consistently been showing a Romney lead. But there is not in my analysis, I haven't seen a single site that analyzes the Electoral College, and I follow five or six of them.
That has Romney with a lead in the Electoral College.
College.
Yeah, none of them do.
You know, so, hey, we may be in for another split. And I've said in a couple different contexts to a couple different people at this point, you know, what I look forward to most in this scenario is seeing all these people talking on TV with exactly 180 degree opposite position on Electoral College than they had in the year 2000.
Interesting.
You know, because you're going to see all these people who in the year 2000, when Gore lost, the Electoral College but won the popular vote, who talked about how the Electoral College was unjust and blah, 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 and how we needed to get rid of it, blah, blah, blah. And then you had the people saying, well, yeah, that's how our system is. Get over it. And then you're going to have
I wasn't saying that. You know, let's face it, I was disappointed to Gore lost. I don't know if I thought that the Electoral College was I got to that decision. I mean, I think that the reality, what I thought more was, I mean, I was just disappointed in the way that I was more upset with the way that the elections were handled on a state-by-state level with such different standards in order to count votes or in order for the ballots to how they should be. Or for people to be able to have their right to vote. Mm-hmm. I think that was more a little bit more what I thought more than the Electoral College is unfair because, you know, like you mentioned, one of the big advantages that the Electoral College has, which is one of the reasons why I think it will not go away, is that if you get rid of the Electoral College, you wind up with presidential candidates that just go and campaign in Chicago, in Miami, in New York.
Yep.
In L.A.
Well,
And national commercials.
Lots of national commercials, and then the in-person stuff is all in the big cities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, why the hell would they do anything else? And I think that really does a big disservice to most of the American people. I mean, I think that honestly, you know, say sometimes, well, your vote doesn't count. I think your vote actually
I wouldn't necessarily say most. It does disservices to large portions of the country geographically, but the reality is this is an urban country. The population has been moving towards the cities and big population areas.
But we certainly get plenty of attention by the candidates anyway. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, where the hell was a debate, for God's sakes? You know,
Well, that's because you're in Florida. The real difference here is that it makes them have to split their time.
Yes, they can't just go and campaign there.
The real difference here, turns out, everyone thinks it's large states versus small states, but the reality is it's swing states versus everybody else.
Right.
You know, because the way the Electoral College works, I mean, right now we've got, you know, depending on how you count, between 3 and 9 states that are relatively close, okay? And we've really got 1 or 2 states that are going to really make the difference in the election, you know?
Right.
They're just a very handful of states that are going to be sort of the turning point. And if you don't get those, you're screwed. And so those states are the states that get attention. So you've got big, huge states that get zero attention. California, Texas, New York. None of these states get any attention whatsoever, even though they have huge numbers of electoral votes, because everybody knows who's going to win.
Right.
You know, so it's not big state versus small state. It's close.
Swing states versus states where it's a blowout. Basically, yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, Obama, how many times has he visited Texas?
And look, here's the thing. If it was a national popular vote, and full disclosure, I'm a big advocate of the Electoral College. And in fact, I would be in favor of reforms to the Electoral College to make it even less democratic, as it were. But if you had a national popular vote, then, you know, how well you did in Texas would still matter. You know, even if you were behind in Texas, it would matter how far behind you were.
Right.
You know, whereas right now that doesn't matter at all. You know,
it doesn't make a damn difference. Yep.
And so you'd have the candidates campaigning in there might be concentration in the big cities, but they'd be spreading out over a larger portion of the country than they do today, probably, actually. So I don't know. I mentioned in one of the comments to my last update, the Electoral College reform that I would actually be most interested in seeing, that I think would be a lot of fun, which of course will never happen. I'm talking completely out of my ass.
Because it's just purely for Sam's enjoyment. What's the reform?
Here's what I would do. See, people forget. You know, it's sort of traditional, and the states have done this for many decades, for the most part. That, you know, they assign all of the electors to their states based on the results of a statewide election in November.
Correct.
That is not required. The states can decide how to do their electors any way they want. And they can actually, by the way, they can change their minds after the November election before the electors meet in December. That was actually talked about in the year 2000. The Florida state legislature could have met and said, you know, forget the election. We're going to pick the electors.
Right.
They didn't. That would have been a big, you know, brouhaha. But
yes.
As if it wasn't a big enough brouhaha as it was. But states could do that. States can pick their electors however they want. Right now we have Maine and Nebraska doing things a little bit differently, where they do congressional districts as well as the popular vote in the state. But states could do even wider things. You know, a state could decide that, you know, hey, forget the election. The state legislature is going to determine the electors each time. The state they could decide to determine where their electors go by coin flip. They could decide to make their electors go via the national popular vote.
Wouldn't that be awesome, like every state to have like at a, you know, I don't know, we would go down here, say, at a big football stadium, maybe we could go up a Dolphin Stadium or something or whatever, and we got a huge crowd, and here's the official coin flip for the election, and it is, you know. Yes, yeah. That would be amazing.
For that matter, they could decide their electoral college by the results of a gladiatorial combat between the campaigns.
Oh, gosh, that would be even better. Could you imagine that? We say, hey, we want Biden and Ryan, okay, in a steel cage match at the stadium, okay? I mean, sell tickets for that thing. We probably could eliminate the deficit if we did that. We just went around every state.
And probably eliminate Joe Biden in the process.
yes.
That's kind of an uneven match you described there. Here's my favorite. Because I actually think this would be somewhat representative of the population. It would actually be somewhat democratic, but in a different way. Anybody who wants to be an elector, put your name in. The electors are chosen completely at random. And then the electors who are chosen vote their conscience when the Electoral College meets.
Nice.
I like that in a lot of ways.
Well, you like a lot of crazy things, but anyway.
But you know, because you would get sort of a representative sample of the people who care enough to put their names in. And, you know, they do their thing and they think and they vote for who they want. Now, of course, if I was chosen elector, there's also, you know, hey, I bet you a bunch of people are giving me some attention, trying to convince me one way or another. Maybe I get like a yacht out of this.
Yeah, you know? It sounds like great. I like it.
There are lots of potentials for bribery in this option, but you could carefully police that. You know, if one of these people suddenly has a large windfall, you're like, what the fuck? You know, you disqualify them in some way. I don't know. But
well.
Anyway, well, but then you'd get the political commercials off TV because it would all be about convincing these 538 people. It wouldn't be about convincing the general population.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so anyway, I like that. Just to cover one final summary here. I've been working on a graph that in one of my next couple updates I'll put out that shows sort of the tipping point margin. And this is sort of a little bit like what Sam Wang does with his meta margin, although not quite as sophisticated, which is basically, instead of the popular vote, just how far do all of the tipping point states have to move in order to tip the balance? So I mentioned right now, the tipping point is Nevada, and it has to move by 2.8% in order for Romney to win. So what's the trend in that number? And I've been highlighting that number on my website for the last few updates, but I'm trying to put together a chart of it. The most recent trend is that number bottomed out on October 23rd, where Romney only had to move Ohio by 1.2% approximately in order to win the election. In the last few days, things have been moving away from Romney so that now it's 2.8%. So like you've got a lot of conversation and oh, there's Romney. Romney has the momentum. No, Romney doesn't have the momentum. And like a whole bunch of analysis has shown that from, you know, 538, Sam Wang, my own, all kinds of people, you know, Romney's momentum bottomed out a week or so ago at the latest, earlier, depending on how you count. And it's been moving towards Obama ever since. If you look at his chances of winning or what the tipping point states are or things like that, like I said, even when you have had movements in individual states towards Romney, they haven't been the states that are going to make a difference.
Right.
Even when he's bringing, like, he brings Pennsylvania back, so it's closer than it was, than it looked a few days ago. Well, okay, Pennsylvania is closer than it was, but it's still not, Obama's still got like a 4% lead there, you know? So anyway, it's looking pretty solid for Obama, to be honest. Now, you got to have the caveat there that still says 9 days left, things could happen. But, you know, the way I've put it on my blog is that if we have the status quo, if we basically just have the campaign continuing over the next 9 days, Obama wins.
That's correct. You know, that's what it seems like right now.
In order for Romney to win, something has to happen. Who knows what that something is, but something has to happen. And with that, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll maybe talk about one of the potential somethings that could happen and affect things, which is Hurricane Sandy. So, we'll be right back after this message. Okay, here we are. You still there, everyone?
Yeah, I'm still here.
He's like all quiet.
I actually, the thing is that I was like reading, I was just reading some numbers here regarding the polling, like right now. So that's what I was like looking at. And, you know, it seemed like it's just, I was reading Nate Silver's like analysis on the numbers, basically.
Yep.
But basically, his take is the Friday's battleground state polls, just to make sure, on Friday right now.
The post you're looking at is state poll averages usually call election right, correct?
Correct.
From posted on October 27th, which was Saturday. Go ahead.
October 27th on the
New York Times.
I mean, it says between Ohio and the other battleground states, Mr. Obama held leads in 11 polls on Friday against 4 leads for Mitt Romney and 2 ties. Mr. Romney's leads came in North Carolina and Florida, 2 states where the 538 forecast already has had him favored. To that extent, there was a trend in state polls that was slightly favorable for Mr. Obama. Among the 8 polls he had previously published numbers after a first presidential debate, Mr. Obama gained in about, for some reason the page didn't download on my computer. For some reason I could talk to you and I can't do anything else. But bottom line is that, I mean, you look at these. It's like Colorado right now, Obama plus 1. Okay, Florida, he's showing Romney, both polls, Romney ahead. 2 points or 5 points. Iowa, Obama ahead by 4 points. Okay, North Carolina, which I never thought that, I mean, you know, Obama had a shot. Romney ahead by 1, Romney ahead by 8. Two different polls.
You know,
there's three polls. One on that had Obama by 3.
North Carolina.
And two that had Romney ahead. Okay.
Yvonne, I just want
New Hampshire.
To say real quick, because you made a comment about North Carolina.
Yes.
Romney has been ahead in North Carolina most of the year, but I think, you know, that having a shot, North Carolina has been close.
All year, Obama has actually been ahead a couple of times in North Carolina, despite the fact that he didn't have a shot. I think of
North Carolina was clearly most favored towards Romney of all the close states.
Correct,
but it has still been a close state.
It has.
Obama
been,
had a shot.
I don't dispute that. I just think that even though it was close, I didn't think that Obama was going to take that state. There's been
a poll showing North Carolina tied as recently as this week.
Yes, but right now one of the polls.
All I'm saying is it's close. I agree.
Right.
Romney is the favorite in North Carolina, no question whatsoever about it. But
exactly.
But it was a close state.
I know. I was just – that's why I'm
okay,
saying
go ahead.
Been a close state all along, but I still thought that Romney was going to take the state. Okay? Just like I felt all along that even though Florida – even though – so for a part of the time, Obama had a lead and it was close. I still thought that – I mean, if I think we talked about this about a month ago, where I went, I did my worst case election prediction, and I gave Florida to Romney, even though at the time the polls didn't show Romney ahead, and then Romney now goes and is shown ahead in almost all the polling. It was just what I felt was the dynamics of the state at the time.
Again, with Florida, as of my last update, Florida Romney is ahead, but only by less than a percent. Florida is still very close.
I know. I gotcha. New Hampshire, okay, you're showing both polls that came out on Friday, both gave Obama a lead. New Mexico, I mean, geez, the lead is 9 points. I mean, I know that they were supposed to be close, but that state has swung substantially
in Obama's
way. That's not even – I don't think that's going to be even close. Nevada was one poll, still showed Obama ahead, very, very tight race. Ohio, three polls came out, all gave Obama a lead. Virginia, a tie, okay, and that was one of the ones that I know that I'm actually that one I'm not sure which way is going to go. That's interesting. Wisconsin showed two polls, one a tie, and the other one Obama a 5-point lead. So basically, I mean, for the most part, you know, like you said, it's really for the most. I mean, of these states, it's. I mean, we're talking about less than 9 days to the election, and Obama has a lead in a lot of these that Romney would need to really turn over in order to win.
Yeah. I mean, in my last update of these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, we have 10 states with a margin less than 5%, according to my five poll averages. And, Romney's only ahead in North Carolina and Florida and tied in Virginia. And Obama has the slight average. If you go to a six poll average instead of five, it's Obama.
Right.
Yeah. And again, so in order to win, he has to pull ahead. He has to keep his leads in North Carolina, Florida, pull ahead in Virginia, Iowa, New Hampshire, Colorado, and Nevada, minimum.
Right. Minimum.
Or you could get Ohio and then dispense with either Colorado or Nevada. But you know,
tall order.
Yeah, but it's getting to be a tall order, and you know, Obama. We're back. You know, in the profile of the race. Is back towards where, right about where it was right after the Democratic convention. Okay? Obama's doing a little worse than the. But when we were talking about this right around the time between the Republican and Democratic conventions, which is an almost exact match to where we have now, minus taking away the possibility of Obama winning one of the red states, we were talking about how good it was for Obama. And the only thing that changed that was the massive drop after the first debate from and actually starting a week before the first debate and up to the VP debate. There was a massive drop and it's like, what the hell? There's a collapse here. But, you know, we're back in fairly secure territory for Obama. That's not to say that Romney can't win. Again, there's like if something happens in the next 9 days, he could. But we're flat. OK, now. I was trying to wrap up this topic, Yvonne, and you.
I know, but it's just
because all we end up doing is reiterating the same thing.
Always, this is a very, this is it, man. We're in the home stretch, baby. We're not going to be able to talk about this 9 days from now.
Oh, but you know, we'll be able to start about talking about 2020.
2020.
Oh wait, 2016. Let's do 2016 first.
Yes, that would be.
I always, whenever I talk about this, and I've made this mistake a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, I realize I always skip 2016 and go straight to 2020.
Oh, man, Jesus Christ, 2020, dude. I mean, that's, I'm going to be fucking old as all shit doing this thing.
Anyway.
I mean, 2020, I'm almost 50, for God's sakes. Fuck. Okay, anyway. All right. Let's move on.
Moving on. There's a hurricane coming. Now, you know, I'll try to get this show out the door before the hurricane actually hits. But because we look silly when we talk about these things and then something completely different happens. But, you know, at the moment, look, the bottom line is, and I'm looking at the best summary I've read right now is from Brendan Loy, who posts on Pajamas Media at the Weather Nerd site. I've retweeted his posts a number of times. The most recent that he posted earlier on Sunday, October 28th, is titled "The Board is Set, the Pieces are Moving." Okay. And this guy's just like I am with elections. He's an amateur on hurricanes, but he gets really in depth and he points at all the real experts when they have things to say or good data. But look, the bottom line prediction, Sandy will keep getting better organized today, will bomb out tomorrow, not long before landfall, into a monster storm with possibly record low pressures for the northeast mid-Atlantic, will hang a sharp left into New Jersey, and will bring a huge, devastating, life-threatening, wind-driven storm surge, worsened by extremely high surf and astronomical high tide, into Long Island Sound, New York Harbor, and the south shore of Long Island and the New Jersey shore. Coastal damage will be extensive, wind damage will be severe, including well inland due to sustained battering and the possibility of unusually extreme gusts. Property losses will be extraordinary, loss of life is probable if people do not take the storm very, very seriously. Then after making landfall, Sandy will finish its transition to an extra tropical but still powerful storm and will dump heavy snow on portions of West Virginia and Pennsylvania. Elsewhere, it'll dump heavy rain, producing inland flooding in some areas. Millions will lose power, probably through Election Day and beyond. If you're in an impacted region, today is your last day to prepare. By tonight, weather conditions will already be deteriorating. So, you know, that's what we have. And one of the things that's been mentioned here is this is a very unusual storm in the way that it's merging with the winter storm. But nevertheless, unlike some other storms recently, all of the computer models are in very excellent agreement. Like sometimes when you look at these storms, like, you know, they're you know, a whole bunch of different computer models and they have it going all over the place. And some of them think they're doing this and some of them think they're doing that. Apparently this time all the models are focusing in.
Well, the thing is that the models, well, just, you know, since I've tracked storms, I was a little kid. Just one thing about the modeling right now, over the last couple of years, the modeling, when it's gotten to about less than 5 days out, and let's face it, we're only really about 48 hours out. Yep. The 72-hour modeling has been very damn accurate.
And by the way, specifically
and
on
that's
the path,
where we are right now. We're expecting landfall sometime Monday night.
Right.
Okay. Right now. So, I mean, we are less than 24 hours away. So the models are pretty accurate in that extent,
and
like right now.
Specifically, let me say that the place
now,
where the models
the
have improved.
The one thing is about
Avon,
this
let me get a point in. Let me get a point. Let me get a point in. Let me get a point in. Let me get a point in. Let me get a point in.
Okay. It's just for, I got to tell you, for some reason, sometimes I'm not hearing you on my end. Okay. So just so you know.
Avon, now haven't I told you before if that's happening, you need to tell me?
I've only really noticed it like right now.
Okay, because who knows? Maybe you're not recording me. Let me say this, and then we'll take a break and check to make sure we're actually recording me. All I was trying to get in and say was the model specifically over the last, you know, decade, two decades, in terms of the point of landfall and the path have gotten tons better. They're much, much better at forecasting path, and that's getting better every year. And so, like, now there's still a big cone of uncertainty, but it's a lot less than it used to be. The place that the models still haven't been improving that much is in intensity. So, like, they can tell you in a pretty good way that the storm's going to hit at such and such place with plus or minus 100 miles or 50 miles or whatever at this point. But there's still a lot of uncertainty about intensity and things like that. But as you said, now we're 48 hours in, even that starts to get pretty good because there's just not that much time left.
Right. And just the quick thing I wanted to mention about this, that's how it's going right now. I mean, it is a low level Cat 1 right now. Now, the one thing is about this, people think, well, it's not that, you know, it's not that strong. Listen, this is, especially for this area, is probably the most dangerous, okay, to a certain extent. Because look, so the winds are you know, 75 mile an hour winds, which a lot of places over there experience. But the problem really is going to be the sustained and heavy amount of rain. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are, you know, these areas are not used to that kind of a heavy tropical rain like that. And that's what's really been dangerous in previous times before when a hurricane like this has hit. Now, the winds, I mean, shit, you get winds like these at many other times with certain different storms for a certain amount of time. But my main concern with a storm like this is going to be the widespread rain and flooding that this is going to bring to the area. So, you know, people over there need to make sure, number one, the wind damage you're going to get, I don't expect housing to be as affected by the wind by the wind problem. What you're going to get is quite a lot of fallen trees, power going to be cut out, probably for a very extended period of time. So people need to make sure that you prepare with, like, the, you know, the essentials. I was actually telling our friend Rebecca, okay, to make sure, you know, because the last time they had a storm, they weren't prepared. Like, I told them one tip from very long time I've had to deal with this is buy a whole bunch of bags of ice and put them in your freezer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You do that because that way you'll be able to keep that stuff in there cold for an extended period of time in case the power goes out, and you can use the ice to cool down anything else.
Right.
Make sure the second thing you get is you get a big cooler, okay? Try to get an igloo cooler, okay? With that ice, you can cool down anything you need to cool for an extended period of time. So therefore, that way you can keep food and other perishables and stuff like that safe. Third thing is get a lot of fucking water, okay? You never have enough water. Fill up your bathtubs. Fill up anything that you've got. Just make sure you got all the water available that you can get your hands on, like, right now, okay? So those are the key things that you need. Make sure you got also plenty of, like, food that's non-perishable as well. You know, if you don't have at home, if you have gas, that's a good thing, you know, for cooking. If you want to be, like, sometimes, you know, you're worried about gas leaks and other stuff, make sure you have a little portable gas stove. Make sure you have some charcoal available. You can barbecue, okay, for example.
I mean, So anyway, the latest update from the Hurricane Center, which appears to be after that, what I read you before, has it moving down a little south. Further south along the New Jersey shore,
yep.
And maybe menacing Philadelphia a little bit more, you know, rather than New York City. But it's this thing's huge. It's going to affect that whole area.
Basically
everything from, you know, Virginia through Massachusetts is going to have effects, and, you know, maybe even North Carolina. Some, you know, they're all going to have effects of this storm. So, anybody in that area, be safe. We're going to take another break. I'm going to check to make sure that the recording actually has me on it and not just Yvonne. And
that kind of suck.
And then we'll be back and we'll talk a little bit about the election, the potential effects on the election of this storm, because it's going through a couple states that might matter. Well, we're talking basically Virginia. We'll be right back after this. And then we will talk about the iPad mini and Windows and Surface and all that stuff, too. We'll be back. After this. And we're back. I'm thinking.
And I told Sam that I would speak a little bit softer, okay, in order to try to make sure that that I can hear him when he's speaking up somehow.
And we all know Yvonne can try, but, you know.
Yeah, well, eventually I'll forget. But anyway.
Talking softly is not an Yvonne skill.
No, definitely not. Oh, good. You know. Anyway.
So we just wanted to mention briefly, and then we'll move on to tech. There have been a number of people speculating of effects on the election. Now, this is hitting about a week before the election, so there should be time to clean up most of it and have things back to normal by Election Day. However, a number of people have pointed out a couple things. One, normally, the week before the election, the people who actually run elections, you know, the people who, like, sit there and make sure that everything's working and have you sign in and then go and do your thing and tell you what to do and make sure the machines are working, usually the week before the election is the time they're getting everything set up. and getting everything running and going through the trial paces. So they're gonna lose some time in that kind of prep work. It should probably be fine, but it all depends on how extensive the damage actually is in what areas, whether you get any disruption and that sort of thing. The second is, depending on how bad this is, you might still have power outages in areas, going out on election day. Now, usually with these things, they try to restore powers to places like schools and such first, which is where you usually have ballots at schools and churches and that kind of stuff. So they'll probably give some priority to this. So it probably isn't going to have a major effect. But if you had worse than expected problems, then you might have some depression of voter turnout, for this election. Now, when we look at this, the only real swing state in the path of this storm is Virginia. Now, New Hampshire might get some effects a few days later, but they're going to get rain.
It's really Virginia.
Yeah, but it's really Virginia, and it looks like it's going to basically hit northern Virginia, not southern Virginia. Guess what the situation is in Virginia? Northern Virginia is where the Democrats live. So if you have a storm heavily affecting northern Virginia but leaving the rest of Virginia alone, that could be enough to tip Virginia to Romney. Again, it depends on how fast this gets cleared out and whether we still have lingering effects at that point. So this might make the difference in Virginia. Now, because Virginia is right on the edge. Virginia is tied. For all intents and purposes, Virginia is tied right now. So any little thing could make a difference. So maybe the hurricane gives Virginia to Romney. Could be. The other thing is the other states we're hitting, Maryland, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New York, etc., New Jersey. These are all Democratic states, potentially heavily Democratic states. But there's a dynamic there, too. If there is a reduction in voter turnout, you could very easily make the argument that people would be like, hey, if Obama supporters could be like, hey, this state's going Obama. It doesn't matter. They don't need my vote. It's going to be a pain in the ass to get there. I'm going to go home. I'm going to stay home. I'm not going to bother. New Jersey's going to go Obama no matter what. And Obama would still probably win New Jersey, but if that reduces the voter turnout of Obama supporters, but the Romney supporters are still like, hey, I'm going to go out, that could also make a difference to the popular vote scenario we were talking about earlier. Because if you reduce Obama's margins in those states, that helps the national popular vote for Romney. So there are a variety of ways that this hurricane could actually affect the election. But again, the key here is, if this was hitting on election day, a week later, whole different story. But it's hitting a week before this, so probably most things will be cleaned up and the effects will be minimal.
By the way, I got my ballot in the mail.
Yeah.
Okay. A sample ballot, not that I'm voting by mail.
Yeah.
So I can vote two ways. I can go and vote in person. Okay. Yep. Now, here would be the cool thing about voting in person. I think I mentioned this earlier. I can go vote against Romney at the place he gave the 47% speech.
Right.
Or I can vote early and it's at the library, like just a few miles away.
Right.
So I don't know.
You go to the 47% place.
What's that?
I say you go to the 47% place, just for fun.
I know, I got to go to the 47% place. I know.
You know, Washington State is 100% mail-in ballots. Mail-in has been an option for everybody for the last couple of elections, but this is, starting with the last off-year election in 2010, Washington State is 100% mail-in. You can't go somewhere in person if you want to. Now, they do have drop-off boxes, so like if you don't want to buy a stamp, you can go to one of these places with a drop-off box and drop it in there, which is actually what I've done, not because I'm too cheap for a stamp, but because I actually want to go somewhere and drop off the ballot, you know?
I guess my question that I always get a concern, I mean, let's face it, mail occasionally gets lost, okay? All right, not very often,
yeah.
Okay? But it happens, okay? Yeah. I mean, how do you know for sure that your ballot got – I mean, when I go to this place, they will scan the ballot right in front of me, and I can see a confirmation that my vote got tabulated. Like right there.
You know, you're right, but I think the answer is, so far, it hasn't been a problem. Like, you know, people can imagine issues.
It's not like you get a confirmation that your ballot got received, or do you?
I think there actually is a way to do that. Yeah, actually, there's a tracking number, and I've never bothered, but I think there is actually a way to do that.
Oh, okay. All right. If you at least get that, so that way you know in advance, I'm like, okay, I'm okay with that. Okay.
So I could be wrong, but I think there is a way to confirm that. But anyway, so I have always, despite the fact that we've got the ballots, we've had the ballots for a week, Brandy already voted. I have always waited till the day of and turned my ballot in at one of the ballot places rather than mailing it in. And frankly, I've usually done it with 10 minutes to spare before things closed. I'll maybe do it with a little bit more than 10 minutes to spare this time. We'll see. But yeah, I like... I'm putting it off. I have an idea on the presidential, and I'm still wishy-washy. I need to make the final call whether I'm actually going to vote Libertarian or whether I'm just going to go for Obama. But the down ballot races, I'll be honest, I don't know all that much about them. So like, I know that the process of filling out this ballot, I'm going to actually have to spend 20, 30 minutes each, at least on the big ones like senator and governor and things like that, and find out a little bit more about these people. Because I'm not one to do a, hey, I'm going to vote for all the Democrats, or I'm going to vote for all the Republicans. So
I got to say this. One thing that I'm just annoyed by our ballot is that there are 12 constitutional amendments.
Oh, yeah.
12. I mean, 12? Really? I mean, I find that extremely annoying.
Yeah, we've got several here, too. I generally think that most of those things really should be left to the legislatures. And
I agree.
And even if you have a mechanism for the people to vote on referendums, I really wish they wouldn't do it by amendments to the state constitution. I wish there was another mechanism to do that, because to me, like, you end up with, like, these horrible, state constitutions that are super, super long, full of these things. And I really
believe... that cause a lot of problems. Look at California and how many budget issues they have because there are stupid amendments to the Constitution.
Well, I don't care if it becomes law the same way. It has the effect of law. But I just have a fundamental... A constitution should describe the way in which government works, not policy issues.
And this is a lot of shit in here is policy. Okay? Yeah. It should not be in the Constitution. Okay?
Yeah. All right? I mean,
it's like, let me give you an example. Prohibition of public funding of abortions. They've put one to try to prohibit the passing of a law like Obamacare. Okay? They're trying to put it in the Constitution, by the way, in a way that is expressly unconstitutional. According to the Supreme Court, which is one of the most hilarious things about it. I mean, these are a fucking waste of time. Like 80% of these. I mean, I don't get it. It's fucking bullshit. Anyway.
Anyway. So we veered back into the election. What were we talking about? I'm so confused now.
We're supposed to talk Windows 8 or Surface or iPad minis or something.
Or something. Let's take another break just to make a clean separation. And then our last segment will be tech. Promise. Oh, we were talking about effects of hurricane on the election. I know what it was. Oh, and by the way, Bloomberg is not evacuating even the low-lying areas of New York City, which a lot of weather folks are complaining about and saying is a mistake. And that
why is he not doing that?
I don't know. Apparently, he had a news conference yesterday on Saturday and was like, no, we're not doing anything. We're staying put. Be prepared, but no one has to leave. Whereas this is supposed to be worse than Hurricane Irene, where he did evacuate those areas. But I think a lot of people are speculating it's because he evacuated all of those areas for Hurricane Irene, and then it underperformed a little bit and turned out that maybe it would have been okay if those people stayed. And so now he's being gun-shy.
You know, that happens all the time. You can't use
that's the whole thing. Like you can't base the evacuation decision on the best case scenario. You have to base the decision on the worst case
scenario.
And usually the worst case doesn't happen. That's what it means to be a worst case. Right. But the whole idea is you have to sort of if you don't prepare for the worst case, then if it does happen, you're going
to
be completely fucked.
There's nothing to do with it. There's nothing to do. Right.
And by the time, you know, like, yeah, part of the problems that people criticize Negan about in Katrina is he waited until it was too late to make the call. You know? And that's what you have happening here. Like, it's not like Bloomberg can decide to evacuate Manhattan, you know, 2 hours before the storm hits, you know.
And not really going to work.
And the way, by the way, Manhattan, a lot of it is significantly above sea level. So generally, they would only evacuate the low-lying areas around the edges of not just Manhattan, but the rest of New York City. But still. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Anyway, we'll be right back. And all tech for the last segment. Promise. Okay, we'll be right back. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. And here we are. So Yvonne, we had a number of tech things. We had the announcement of the iPad Mini. We had Microsoft Surface actually going on sale. And let me check. When is Windows 8? When is it really coming out? Let's check Wikipedia.
I don't know.
I'm checking Wikipedia right now, this very second.
Was it Friday?
2 days ago. Friday, the 26th. Yes.
Well, I guess it arrived with a big loud thud.
Yeah. So, like, I guess let's talk about the Microsoft stuff first and then move on to the Mini. The Microsoft Surface came out a couple days ago, too. And the reviews, there's been a uniform theme in the reviews, which is actually the hardware is pretty nice. People like the hardware.
But the software sucks.
People are like, they have some caveats about the hardware too. There's some things that aren't perfect, but they're like, the hardware is pretty nice. I've even seen some reviewers saying this is actually better than the iPad in terms of hardware. They've taken a leap forward, but the software sucks, indeed. Like, the software is like, people are like, it's not ready, it's clunky, it's slow to respond. There's almost no software available for it other than the built-in stuff, and the built-in stuff sucks. And there's a Microsoft Office beta that ships with it, but it's almost unusable, etc. And, like, it's been pretty bad, you know. If you look at the overall pictures of the review, a lot of people saying things like, hey, this has lots of potential. I can see where this might be good once they make a few more revisions to it. But almost every review I've said has said, don't buy this. And they also showed, there were a number of articles I read, and I wish I don't have one in front of me to point out right now. But I've seen at least two or three articles that basically were around people, you know, reporting at the scene at Microsoft stores. Because, of course, Microsoft now has these stores that are set up that are, like, basically copies of the Apple store, and very often right next door to an Apple store. So they had all this planned. They have extra staff that they hired. They have this, like, big, you know, sort of presentation event, and they have all these people waiting to give you demos, and, you know, and apparently, let's just say there aren't any crowds.
No, and there's some people like saying that somehow with the Microsoft announcement that somehow Apple is going to be losing in some way that I'm still failing to see. Because, look, the Enterprise is moving significantly towards bring your own device. Okay?
Which, by the way,
IT departments have figured out a freaking way to get out of fucking providing IT hardware.
I think that is so fucking bullshit, by the way. That is such bullshit. I mean, it's definitely a trend. I definitely see it. Like, right now...
Dude, I mean, I don't know. You don't think so? Let me tell you something. I am seeing...
No. I agree with the trend. The trend is there. I just think it's like... I, as an employee, I think the fact that I am almost expected to set up my home iPhone to check my work email is bullshit. If they want me to check my work email, they should be buying me a fucking phone.
Do I think it's bullshit? I think you and I, that have worked for multiple companies before, think so. But I think that the younger generation is like thinking differently. They're like thinking, well, why the fuck am I supposed to use this piece of crap they're giving me?
No, I know, and I believe that, but, like, here's what kills me. Like, you know, okay, to use my iPhone on the work exchange server, they have to, you have to grant them access that lets them remote wipe your device. I don't want them fucking remote wiping my device. And the technology, like, if they could remove my access to my work email remotely if they fired me, okay, fine, whatever. But that's the way that it's set up.
But here's the thing.
It wipes the whole damn device.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. Okay, two things about that. Okay, number one, okay, I figured out that the simple way around that is before, I mean, they even do that, I can just go and delete my connection to the company.
Well, yeah, if you know.
Well, I mean, like, why else would they be remote wiping your device? Just because they're random?
Well, here's they could remote wipe your device for several reasons. One is they're firing you. And,
right.
And you might not have...
You don't have the chance to go and like...
So maybe you don't have the chance to fix
it.
Now, I'm hopefully not worried about that right now.
Okay,
they could do it by mistake.
Hold on. I mean, I have a cloud backup.
I have a cloud backup, too, but
I could just restore it in 2 seconds.
Well, yeah, but...
I think the remote wipe thing is the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard.
No, look. Yes, you could restore it in 2 seconds, but your cloud backup happens periodically. It's not constant. It's all whatever. You could lose whatever. I get really paranoid about losing data. So I'm worried about the pictures I took 10 minutes ago that I haven't yet got in the cloud or anywhere else.
Yeah, you know, I get like that. But the reality is that the amount of data that you could possibly lose is so little.
But anyway, the point is, regardless of that, and by the way, if my employer actually has a program where you can bring your own laptop too.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
But for that one, you have to do a company managed image that's highly restrictive and installs certain things and they have monitoring, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, really? I mean, I understand why it saves companies money, and there's no question. You know, your company is jumping up and down in the aisles if you're bringing your own equipment and they don't have to buy it for you. But, you know, at the same time, like, I have this whole thing of I really would like, as much as possible, to keep my work and personal stuff separate.
I agree. I totally agree. You know, and I'm one of those guys that, I actually see a couple of people in my office that have a personal laptop that they use for work because they are connected, you know, with our, you know, program. I've seen a couple. But, you know, for my laptop itself, I am not – there's no way I would just bring my own laptop, personal laptop, and use it for work.
Now,
I have no problem I was offered a company phone.
And it sucks.
But the thing is that I didn't want to be carrying two phones, to be honest with you.
No, and I understand that, and I understand that. And you know, honestly, I have a work laptop provided by work, but do I have my work email on it? Yes. I mean, my home email. I have my home email on it? Yes. Do I have some personal files on it? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not doing anything with it that I'd believe my company would object to, but am I using it for some personal purposes when I'm not using it for work? Yeah.
I barely use my work laptop for any personal stuff, but there are occasions that I use it for some personal stuff. But for the most part, I mean, I use either my tablet or my iPhone, actually, for the most part, for those personal things I want to do when I'm not, you know, with my work laptop. But I think the point, going back to what Microsoft launched,
yeah, back
and what
to Surface.
They're doing,
let's talk about Surface.
I mean, you know, some people are calling, like, what are the losers from this Windows launch, like Apple? I'm like, I don't see it. I don't get it. I don't see what the fuck they're talking about. Where Windows has been losing out a lot is in the consumer space more than anything. Launching Windows 8 at this point, when you're launching finally a tablet, how many years behind Apple and how many years behind Android tablet?
By the way, I want to point out, this is we actually didn't mention this when we first talked about the Surface announcement many months ago, and I realized the mission later. One of the important things here is there have been plenty of Microsoft tablets before built by other vendors.
Correct.
The big thing here that's different is Microsoft's making their own hardware too. They're essentially telling the hardware vendors, if you want to build a tablet based on Windows, this is the way you do it. Because they believe all of the other people who've tried to do it have sucked.
Now that's correct. But here's the thing. So the first Windows RT tablet that they launched, number one, runs none of the software that runs on Windows 8.
Yeah, okay. So this is the Surface tablet that just released is the tablet-only Surface. There is one that's due out in a few more months that will have it. So this is on Microsoft RT? I don't know what.
Right, Windows, RT, right.
Windows RT.
It, right. Make it even more confusing launching one with a fucking different fucking name.
It's only got the new tablet touch version of Windows. The full version of Windows 8 will be available on a similar tablet in a few months that will be able to switch back and forth. So I have seen people in the reviews saying, I guess we'll wait for the other one in a few months and see how that is.
Okay, but here's the problem with the other fucking thing.
Yep.
It weighs 2+ pounds. It's basically about the size of a MacBook Air. So what the fuck tablet is that when it weighs 2+ pounds.
Well, not to mention, if you flip over to use the full operating system, then you need that keyboard. That keyboard is no longer optional. The applications aren't built for touch. They're built for a mouse. So you'll need that too. And I guess the keyboard has a touchpad thingy or something on it too. But you need, at that point, you're using a laptop.
Right.
You know, and okay, so it's a netbook at that point.
Right. So I'm like, okay, they fucking lost me entirely, okay, in this fucking thing. So you launch a tablet, okay, that has no software on it whatsoever, okay? So, I mean, I guess it could appeal to people who browse the web or whatever, but when you've got this entire plethora of fucking Apple and, you know, other Android tablets, what the fuck is really drawing you to this thing? I mean, and it's at the same fucking price as the other ones. And yeah, maybe the hardware is a little bit nicer than the other one. Maybe just a little. So what?
But only in some areas, too. Like, apparently the screen's not quite as nice. And I don't know. And the fold-out keyboard thing is neat, but, like, a lot of people have discovered they don't need that. I don't know.
Right.
And I've seen.
And it's not available to get
keyboard.
A fucking fold out keyboard. I know that it's not supposedly as nice as this one, but still, there's a whole bunch of fucking fold out keyboards that come in a case for them for
an iPad. Yes, you can get keyboards for an iPad too. Yeah. So I don't know. This smells like another, you know, Microsoft miscarriage. You know,
yeah.
or something.
At this point, yeah. I mean, look, is Windows 8 look like it's supposedly an improvement over Windows 7? Yeah.
Well,
We were talking tablets.
We were talking tablets so far, and then the other thing, like we mentioned at the beginning, apparently Windows 8 launched on Friday, and yes, I've heard some coverage of it, but, you know.
Well, I was like barely having to look for it. There is no mention. I've got the Sunday New York Times in front of me right now. Nothing on the cover for it. Okay. All right. Let's see. Let me see somewhere else. Let me see if the business section, maybe. There we go. Let me see. Sunday review, nothing. It's about the election. Sunday business. The cover story, awash in milk and money. The perils of a bloated industry, from calm leadership, lasting change. Nothing about this shit. I don't see anything. I mean, this is supposedly the biggest. I mean, Ballmer was on Bloomberg TV on Thursday morning talking about the Surface and the launch of this whole thing. Tried to do a demo on one of the Windows 8 computers that, by the way, did not work. Okay, by the way. All right. And blamed it on some bullshit. And I'm looking at the news, and there's a big fat nothing.
And what little I've have read are people sort of saying, hey, there's a lot of cool stuff here, but it's this weird hybrid because it's got some of this, whatever they've renamed Metro this week, tablet kind of interface, plus it's got the more traditional desktop interface.
Okay.
But on the desktop interface,
they've... On the cover of the Wall Street Journal website, item number, let's see. From the top, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The sixth item from the top is Windows 8 success hinges on a $10 component.
Okay. and then people have said, in the desktop thing, there's also things like they're getting rid of the start menu and changing other things that people sort of have always expected to be there. So there's going to be a lot of difference. And the question is, but what additional value? And I'm looking at a couple screenshots, and it still looks kind of ugly.
And I think that to a lot of people, especially the people that are for the most part using fucking Windows, it's going to be confusing as all shit.
And of course, you have the usual, at this point, the main audience for Windows is enterprise. I mean, yes, there's still lots of individuals out there using Windows too, but the enterprise market, of course, takes years to switch over.
Correct.
So, like,
I'm sure that for a long time, they're still. I mean, they still haven't even. Listen, my laptop is still XP, for God's sakes.
Oh my God, is that like 10 years old now?
Yes. XP? Okay, my laptop is XP. I mean, they are rolling out for the most part. Almost everybody's got a new laptop is on Windows 7. And I happen to be in the bubble. There was a bubble of people that got these. I am in a bubble where I won't get a new laptop for a while. Okay, most people at the office have gotten new laptops. I'd say about 80%, and they are Windows 7. Okay, and that happened over the last 18 months. However, I happen to be in a bubble of people that receive a very late new version of the last image they sold of XP. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I mean, right after I got that one, like 2 months later, they started giving everybody Windows 7. So I am stuck with this.
No Vista?
With this right now. But that means that I still have Windows XP is my point.
Vista's missing here? Nobody got Vista?
Nobody got Vista. Nobody. Nobody. I mean, you know, you talk about a funny story. I actually, you know, went to we met a customer recently that we found is one of the it's the only place that I have been to that I recall that had Vista rolled out throughout its entire company. Okay. It was a couple of hundred users. But it was weird, man. I mean, because we tried to install software, nothing would work right in that environment. It's like everybody, every vendor, like, oh, Vista? Oh, shit. Really? We didn't really support that. I'm like, oh, shit.
Anyway, so enough Microsoft. We're running over our allotted time, but we would be remiss not to at least talk about the iPad Mini a little.
Yes, and this is what I'm going to say about the iPad Mini, like quickly in a short version. The morons that think that it's overpriced at $329 are morons because
it's going to sell like it's going to sell amazingly at this price.
I mean, I'm sorry, it's the difference really is I saw the Google Nexus 7 at $250 for 16 gigs. Or you buy a 250, or you buy an iPad Mini for $329. Or, by the way, you buy an iPad 2 for $399.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry.
And there's a fire in the mix there somewhere too.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. It's on fire somewhere. I mean, I'm sorry, but I've tried that. I mean, you know, even like the Nook HD or whatever, it's $250 something. Okay, dude. I mean, I'm sorry. I've seen the people and the decision. I mean, if you tell me $250 for this or $329 for the Apple, guess what? They're going to pay the premium for the Apple. is what people are missing. Oh, they could have blown it away. Here's the problem. As we found out from a few people that have announced this week, they're selling those $199 and $250 products are basically selling at cost, okay? Yeah. Not making any money. Bleeding some companies, or like even Google right now just announced – one thing, the profits last couple of weeks, Google announced that their profit was down 80%. Some other company announced that they had an unexpected loss.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm like, what that's showing is that, you know what? You can't be selling these products at that price. You're not going to make any fucking money.
And the theory is, of course, just to defend the theory, is that you sell the product at cost or at a loss, and then you make that up later down the line. In Google's case, in advertising, in the other company's case, with sales of media, over the longer term. Of course, it's not like Apple's not selling media too.
Exactly, that's exactly my point. Because Apple is selling media as well, but if you look at the revenue and profit that you can generate from the media, because you're not creating the content yourself. I mean, you're basically a pass-through for that media, too. It's not like you're creating media and you're selling it at 100%. It's not the same equation as, like, when printer companies, you know, like, sell a printer and then at a loss and then they sell the ink. Well, they make all the money in the ink. But you know what? You're not making the media. You're not making 80, 90% on the media. You're basically also making razor-thin margins on the media. So, therefore, it's you can't apply that model that aggressively. I mean, it's, you know, some people are going to, I mean, you got to sell it at a profit.
Although I will say all of these companies that you mentioned, Google, the other one, Amazon, and also other ones like Netflix, they're all experimenting and creating their own content too. So we'll see how that goes down the line. I don't know.
Yeah, but the thing is that even if you create your own content, okay, all right? I mean, let's face it, the world of content is so big, okay, that for the most part, sure, you can go and create your own content. I mean, if you think about it, Apple supposedly, if you think about the fact that Steve Jobs used to own a big chunk of, like, Disney, Pixar, and, yep, you know, was one of the biggest shareholders, you can argue for a certain extent that they do kind of make their own content. But even though they do – and it's popular content, it still doesn't matter because the world of content is so big, okay, that people want to get whatever content they want. So maybe you'll sell them a slice of their content, maybe a couple of points of it, of your own created content. That still doesn't make up for the fact that the bulk of the content is coming from other people that you're going to have to pay the bulk of the money and you get a razor-thin margin. And, I mean, Sony tried that years ago when they bought Columbia Pictures and they bought Sony Music and all of this stuff over the years, and they still figured out that, you know what, it's still not enough. You can't do it. That model has been shown over the years.
And there's been speculation over the years at various times of Apple buying a big record label or a movie studio, and they've never done it.
And I don't see it happening. I really don't see it happening. So, you know, in the end, look, component prices are going to come down a lot of these launches anyway. Pricing's going to come down. I think that the fact is that, like I said before, $70 difference between one product or the other right now, Apple, you know what? People like to pay a premium for the Apple product, and they will pay the premium, period.
So, and here's the bottom line. You end up with a supply and demand curve, and can Apple sell out everything they make and more at this price point? Yes.
Yes.
If I remember, the Mini sold out in 17 minutes when it went on sale Friday.
Let me tell you something. I went to three different stores to try to find anybody with an iPhone 5 available. None. Not one. Not one. Okay? Anywhere. 3 week waiting time. Okay? Yep. Really to get one. I mean, are you kidding me? Okay? Why in God's name would you make the price lower? Okay? When you can't make enough of them. Okay? You know what? If demand slacks off, there is no problem that you go like
They've got room to lower the price.
Exactly right. Absolutely. It would have been stupid to launch it at a lower price. Okay. I mean, you would have left so much money on the table. No way.
Yep. So now let's talk a little bit about the device itself. So, I mean, it's pretty much what people expected. It's an iPad 2 shrunk a little bit smaller. Yep. And so it doesn't have a Retina display. And it's not quite as powerful. And they also, by the way, launched the fourth generation iPad with
which that game is a big shock to everybody.
With increased chip speed, better graphic, same screen but like faster graphics. Some other the main user noticeable difference is the new stupid sync port is the new lightning or thunder or whatever the hell they call it.
Lightning.
But anyway, so bottom line, the mini. A lot less powerful than the full-sized iPad. Not as good a screen as the full-size iPad. But it's little!
It's little, and it's cheaper.
And it's cheaper. And it's not that much cheaper. The difference isn't huge between the two.
Well, with a brand new, you know, with the number, it's $170.
Okay.
I mean, it's a nice chunk of change. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, $170 is $170.
Yeah. So, but, you know, like I look at this and, you know, I had that deal last year that because I bought my car, I wasn't getting an iPad, but I will have had my car for a year on Christmas Eve. So I'm thinking something was going to happen here.
Well, I will say this, you know, I asked my wife that I want an iPhone 5. Okay. Yeah, I will tell you if you ask me what – I mean, I probably the fastest time that I would upgrade for a phone that I've had in a long time, I don't upgrade that quickly. I will tell you that the one reason I do want it is because I do want the faster speed for the connectivity. Mm-hmm. Simply because, you know what, I get so many people sending me large downloads for shit, okay, that I've seen the speed difference between LTE and mine. And before I had – I mean, let's say that I've seen a lot of these LTE devices. I had somebody at the office that bought – Samsung or whatever the heck LTE device. The problem was the battery life was atrociously bad. I mean, the guy went, I remember I had a guy in the office who bought it like 6 months ago, went straight up and returned it, like not a month later because he said, dude, I can't work with this. I can't go a work day with 3 hours of battery life. I can't do this. So he went back to another type of device because of that. And I said, well, you know, I don't care. I wanted an Apple LTE device I wanted a device with a long battery life. So the iPhone 5 has the same battery life as the one that I have right now, and if I can get the increased download speed when I'm on the road, then definitely I want that.
So back to iPads.
Back to iPads.
So
I would like to get a new iPad as well. By the way,
well,
my first gen iPad is old.
Right?
Yes.
So now tell me, like you want a new iPad? You've had the existing iPad for a while.
2 years plus.
Given your experience with that, would you be going for the big one, or would you be tempted by the little one?
I would say I'd go for the big one anyway.
Yeah. Tell me why.
Because the main reason that
by the way, on the phone, iPad, you're all about small, 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 small.
Because the main reason we use the iPad is for a replacement of our laptop, which you don't use anymore at home. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that's why I would like the iPad itself to be a larger device because I am using it as a laptop replacement. Okay? I use
and
the phone.
So you have more screen real estate. You have better. You can.
Right.
It's bigger. You get the nice view of it.
Exactly.
I mean, you see the same amount of space on the smaller one. It's just shrunk a little bit, and because it doesn't have the Retina display, it's a little jaggier.
Yeah, and that's the one thing. I mean, I did go like for the first time. To be honest with you, I hadn't played with any of the new iPads with a Retina display until I got stuck at an AT&T store on
Friday.
They're
pretty sweet, aren't they?
For a very yes. Oh gosh, I looked at it on the iPad. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, damn, this looks so much better than my iPad. I was like, fuck. That's when I came to the conclusion, oh shit, I need to buy a new one of these.
And look, I'm going through, like, okay, assuming that sometime in the next couple months, like December, January, I do go for a new iPad. I have to decide, big one or little one. Now, I'll tell you, I am hoping that I can go and actually see them both in the store and hold them both and compare them and decide. I'm thinking I'm probably ending up where you are with the large one too.
It's a laptop replacement. The reason why you want to pull that out, I mean, I've got my phone so I can view most stuff. When I want to pull out something, I don't want to pull something that's actually kind of in the middle size. I want something that's actually large.
See, I could see a lot of places where I would want that medium size. Like if I'm hanging out someplace and I've got a few minutes and I want to pull something out and just like you know, read the news real quick or something like that.
That's why I got
that.
My phone.
Well, no, yeah, but, you know, I feel cramped. I do that on my phone right now, and I feel cramped. Like, and I, if the phone is fine, if I'm waiting in line somewhere, but if I'm actually going to be sitting and waiting for a while, I wouldn't mind something bigger. But, like, I could see that medium size being nice for that. But like you said, if I'm trying to actually do something a little bit more complicated, I'm going to like the size. And,
right.
And it's a little bit heavier. And also, I can just see myself constantly being like, I like that nicer screen. You know?
Yeah, that screen is so much nicer. I mean, Jesus. I mean, I went and I mean, like I said, I hadn't actually physically gone and looked at that screen, okay? And I went and I grabbed it the other day, and I was like, damn. I was like, gosh, that looks so good.
Yeah.
I mean, and there was a whole bunch of Android tablets around there or whatever, whatnot. I got to take a look at it. And I walked over to that one. I said, you got to be fucking kidding me. Are you joking? I mean, look at the screen. So,
yeah, so I don't know. I think it's the whole trade-off thing between like nicer screen, more powerful, faster versus littler and more portable. I definitely see the benefits on both sides, and I want to touch them in person, but my gut is going with the big one.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I'm tempted. I'm thinking maybe the little one would be like, you know, good as a... There's certain people I'm thinking that maybe it would be good as a present, but it's a little bit more than I want to spend on a present, too.
Right. You know? So. I think that the Mini is... I mean, look, some people want the smaller form factor. They think the iPad is too big.
I've heard a number of people saying that their biggest problem with the iPad is it's too big, and if you're using it for a while, it's uncomfortable to hold in one hand. You really need two hands, and it's kind of heavy. And like if you're reading, you sort of have to hold it up, and it's, and you really want to use it flat on the table or with a stand. And they really want something they can just hold in one hand and not think about it. And the iPad Mini fits that bill.
Right. Okay, so I think we've done the longest podcast in the history of mankind today. Not quite.
I think we hit 2 hours once.
We may have, but anyway. But we're pushing records here, so I think we should.
We're out of here. I'll have to look that up. I don't think we're even in the top five, but anyway.
Well, it's the longest we've done in a long time.
Okay, we'll close it up. Thank you very much for joining us on Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts. We are still looking for a Romney supporter. 1 week left. Please, somebody.
Romney supporter!
You know, and I've...
Stand up!
I've put messages out on Twitter.
Okay.
I've asked a couple people...
This needs to end.
Yvonne needs to go. His baby's crying. Thank you, everybody. We'll tune in next week. Goodbye. Call me if you're a Romney guy. Bye-bye. Wait. Don't go quite yet. I just wanted to say, Yvonne was right. This was one of our longest shows here. It looks like it's coming in at the fourth longest Curmudgeon's Corner ever. So it wasn't the number one, but it was the fourth largest, and it was indeed our longest in a while, the longest since May 18th, 2012. So our longest show ever was an hour and 40 minutes, even. So that was pretty long. This one, an hour, 28 minutes, and 25 seconds if I stop it on time.